everybody. It's Nick here again from the Grayscale Gorilla Podcast. And in today's episode, Chris and Chad join me to talk about procrastination and specifically how to control it when it comes to your career and your free time. Also, toward the end of the podcast, Chad has a special unboxing for us you don't want to miss. And by the way, before we get started, if you haven't given us a review on iTunes, that would mean a lot to us. That would help the podcast and help us get the word out about what we're trying to do here, which is give you guys the information, the tools, the training, and especially podcasts just like this to help you further your career. So thank you once again for watching. As always, we have show notes on YouTube and on iTunes and on our blog. And with that, let's head on in and join the podcast right now. Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. How you guys doing today?
Pretty good. Pretty
good. Doing good.
We got the intro. We got Chad Ashley over there in his puffy jacket looking good.
Hello, hello.
An unlicensed Grayscale Gorilla t-shirt. Do you get that on the streets of New York and on the corner or what?
That's right, man. I got a hookup.
And Chris Schmidt, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm growing out my winter beard.
Oh yeah, is everyone shaving with a slightly longer number lately? Just a little, trying
to
stay warm.
Shaving. See how that goes.
It was 0 degrees on my bike ride in today. Mm. That was extra fun. I'm glad I kept a little shave going.
Yeah, we go on walks to begin and end our day over here, me and my brothers, and we. As it gets colder and colder, the walks are getting shorter and shorter. So today, we didn't even get around the block. We went around the block and then cut through an alleyway and came immediately back home.
it's a little chilly here. Well, we got Christmas, we got the holidays coming up. Anybody looking for anything in particular under the tree? Excited about any new toys coming out?
Well, my Christmas present to myself just got here.
Yeah. Wait, what happened?
Chad and I were talking about this the other day. We're like, you can't have good ideas of what to buy Chad because he just buys his own stuff right away.
We're going to unbox it at the end. It's my new Google Pixel.
We have an unboxing. Ooh, this podcast is getting real fun. All right. So the Google Pixel. All right, we'll talk about it. Well, is this what they call a teaser? I think they call this a teaser.
Sure.
In the industry.
We'll tease it out.
We'll open that dude at the end and ask you questions about it.
Yeah.
Chris, what would make you happy? If you open something at Christmas.
I don't know. I'm used to just getting Legos, but that usually makes me pretty happy. So, but you know what? I think I finally got to the point where if I got a nice pair of socks, I'd probably be pretty happy about that. It took a while, but I'm finally into enjoying and appreciating nice socks.
Nice socks.
I've entered into that phase where that's no longer a bad thing.
Yeah, I feel you on that. There's definitely an age you're like, this is a really nice sweater.
Wearing a nice pair of socks tangibly improves your day.
Oh, for sure.
I think if I got one of those new small drones, that I would dig that. I know that's an expensive gift. I'm just thinking, of all the things that I don't really need, but that I really want, I would say one of those little DJI Mavics or one of those new little teeny drones that they figured out how dummies can drive them and not crash them. That's what I need.
Yeah. I'm afraid of those things. I would just destroy them.
I built my own and I was so scared of flying the damn thing. I'm showing my family and flying around. And I'm just keeping it in this tiny little radius. Everybody stay way back. And then I tried to improve it because it was supposed to fly neutral at half throttle and I had to be a 3/4 throttle. And then when I would drop elevation, I couldn't catch it very well and it'd flip out and then crash. Mm. So I tried upgrading it to be more powerful. So I got bigger motors, but then the bigger motors meant, of course, I needed bigger battery and that meant I needed bigger propellers. And then so I bought these carbon fiber propellers. I had to make the arms bigger. The entire thing got 2 inches bigger on each dimension. And it got so big and scary sounding that I never flew it. Well, and then on top of that, when I tried to do a rev up in my bedroom, I was revving it up, and I didn't upgrade the electronic speed controllers, so it started tilting and it caught the carpet, flipped upside down, and then caught on fire.
Oh my
god! Amazing.
How many people have probably nearly killed themselves playing with drones in their house? Probably a lot.
I didn't do any damage ever. Except to the drone itself, flying it in my house trying to test it out. But man, that thing was so scary. I was like, I cannot use this. I have to downgrade it if I'm going to use it. Because the other one, I go crash and I probably give myself a bad cut, but that'd be it. This one, I feel like you could lose an eye. So like, I was like, I cannot be responsible for this.
Well, do you remember the chop, the before the drones, people had those remote control choppers? I had a friend that was like really into those, and his buddy that he would fly with, you know, wasn't a very good pilot. And these things are like, they're, I don't know, probably like 4 or 5 feet, the wingspan or whatever. I don't know, maybe not that big, but they're really, really dangerous. And so he went flying one day and he started to land, and he landed it, and then hit the battery went out on his controller. So the chopper was just sitting on the ground going, and he's like, oh, I can just turn it off with my foot. I'll just lay on the ground and like get my foot underneath the chopper and flip the switch somehow to off. I don't know how it worked. But it caught his leg and almost severed his leg off.
Jesus.
Because it just like tipped a little bit and was like, wah! And like the guy had this gigantic scar on his leg. So that ever since I heard that story, I was like, nah, I'm good.
These drones are not.
Yeah, I'll do a micro drone, but that's
about
it.
These drones are not.
The one I built, I don't think it would do much worse than like sticking your hand in like a ceiling fan, which hurts, but like it's not going to do any permanent damage.
Yeah, we had micro drones all over DK, and like those things just annoyed the hell out of me. Somebody would start up a micro drone and fly it into my office, and I'd be like,
smack it.
I would like shoot at it with a Nerf gun. Anyway.
That's what's missing from every pretty drone shot is like the constant.
Yeah, in the that background. Sound. That's just like
they always edit that part out.
Look how peaceful this footage
so
looks.
Loud.
I may have mentioned this in another pie. I feel like I've told this, but there was a wedding video that was beautifully shot with all these drones like up ahead and behind and the kiss, and they went around with like the first kiss and everything like that. And then somebody else edited it with all the drone noise in it.
Oh, boy. That's funny. That was
All right. Well,
do we have any Grayscale Gorilla news today?
No, that's it. That's we're just drones and we're taking off.
Drones,
oh,
amputations.
No, we do have Grayscale Gorilla news. Holy moly. We finally, oh my gosh, finally put a date on launching HDRI Link, which is in January. So I guess it's not quite a full date. But January 2017, HDRI Link.
Well, we internally have a date, but we can't be 100% certain that. So we're just going to say early January.
Oh, see, this is good. This is the behind the scenes that people really tune in for, Chris.
It's true.
Do we hit the date? We have been working on HDRI Link for months.
Probably over a year now.
Probably internally. And what we want to make sure is that it is as compatible as we can make it with as many renderers as we can. And so that's kind of the internal secret for you guys, is we're trying to make this thing as agnostic as possible so that it works with any flavor. And so stay tuned for, especially this week, we have some more news about Link coming out. And as we get into January, you're going to see some more stuff. But if you guys are running Arnold Octane and looking to speed up your HDRI workflow, this is the thing, man. We've been using it internally, and I can't work without it at this point.
I know. I feel like it's definitely, it's in my everyday carry for tools for sure.
You got your knife, you got your field notes, and you got your HDRI Link. There you go. We also updated HDRI Studio. Used to be called HDRI Studio Pack. Now it's called HDRI Studio Rig. Put out a new version of that last week. So if you just log into your customer area and you can download the latest version of that. And I think
probably
we went over this
free update we've done for anything in a while.
Yeah, so tell us about the update.
We talked about that a little bit last week. Yeah, we listed off the new features,
why did we change the name though? There's people out there wondering.
Why did we change the name? Because it was super confusing. I was super confused. I've been trying to convince Nick to change this for like a year, and finally we're changing it. So it should be nice and clear that you're buying HDRI Studio Rig. And the rig comes with a separate plugin, which is HDRI Browser. And HDRI Browser also works with HDRI Link. So everything has this nice kind of uniform name all across the board. And
back in 2009 or 2010 when I came out with this plugin, it was primarily really good studio HDRIs, which really didn't exist at the time. Yeah. And so I thought the major part of the product was the HDRIs, which were really good studios. So what it was an HDRI studio pack, and you also get this HDR rig that goes with it to help you use it.
So it wasn't even about the tool. It was about the collection of studio-based HDRs.
Yeah, the tool was a separate thing that was like, well, you know, that you get the seamless floor, mm-hmm. and you get, you know, the ability to easily rotate your HDRIs and all that kind of stuff. And then as we built up HDRI Studio into a more robust plugin, I was like, whoa, this is actually what we're selling is the plugin. This does a lot of cool stuff with the browser and some of the like the fill light stuff that's now included.
Oh yeah.
I was like, okay, now this makes more sense. So this
the best way to do like the seamless. It's the only way that I think to do a seamless floor that I've found in physical.
It is the only way to do a seamless floor.
Yeah, it's cool. It's definitely a great update, and I'm glad that the name is now kind of in sync with what it is, I guess.
We also released the HDRI Link teaser video last Wednesday, I want to say. Got a lot of great comments on it on YouTube as well as Instagram where we put it. If you guys haven't seen that, Chad did a great job in bringing the experience of using HDRI Link to life in this teaser video. So check that out if you haven't seen it, and look for some more stuff this week. And what else in other news around the Cinema 4D globe, around that little blue globe that has the white stuff around it? What else happened? You think you mentioned V-Ray?
Came out? That's right. V-Ray 3.4, I think, came out, which is still not made by Chaos Group. It's made by that third party that I cannot remember the name now, but it's now caught up to the other V-Rays in terms of features for the time being. So a lot of V-Ray people that were waiting for that are happy to see that out. I got, you know, a few people telling me about it. I'm a little bit, I'm skeptical. I came from V-Ray and 3ds Max, where it felt more real. It was Chaos Group. It was the real V-Ray, the original V-Ray. And so when I started working in cinema, people were like, why don't you check out V-Ray? Why don't you check out V-Ray? And I just never really got into it because it was so disconnected from the V-Ray that I knew, because it was done by a third party.
I know V-Ray, and this is no V-Ray.
Yeah, that's exactly that was my quote exactly, and it didn't feel like it was the same. And then around that same time, I started getting familiar with Octane and Arnold, and learning about what those two renderers had to do, what could do in cinema. And I basically kind of realized that V-Ray, even the best V-Ray inside of 3ds Max, felt a little bit antiquated in how it approached rendering compared to Redshift, Arnold, Octane. And so I just never really opened it up in cinema. And I know there's a lot of people that probably love it, but
what about for interiors? I always see that's kind of the stronghold for V-Ray is yes, they got sexy kitchens and modern living rooms holding down, man. That's like their bread and butter. I feel like
V-Ray Chaos Group, that's what V-Ray started as. It was like a really good render for doing ArcViz, and the reason being is because it had some really good cheats for doing GI. So you could bake your GI, you could save your GI as a file with irradiance mapping and light caching and that sort of thing. So when you're doing an interior scene, which generally can take like a really long time to light and be flicker free because there's so many bounce lights and little crevices, that baking your GI solution became a really smart idea because nothing was moving in the scene except for the camera usually. So you could do these amazing architectural visualizations and have them look great. And if you tried to do that brute force or unbiased at that time, it would be really hard to do and really long to do. But now I feel like the technology in Redshift, even Octane, there are some things you can do for interiors to kind of make it go faster. Arnold definitely has some cheats that you can make interior go faster. But whenever, if you're doing ArcViz, if you're a person out there that's interested in third-party renders and you do architectural visualization, I would look at Redshift, because Redshift has the exact same ability to save and cache out your GI in a separate file. to give you that same that same kind of time-saving technique, but it's on the GPU, so it's like really fast. So yeah, that's my take on it.
Can you try Redshift yet? Can you get a
like you
a
can beta get on you can get on the alpha if you kind of make your case on their forum and say, you know,
I thought they closed that off.
Maybe they did. I think they're not just taking anybody. You have to like prove that you're going to be a useful part of the alpha and the beta, and not just somebody that is looking to see it before it's out. They want you to contribute and find bugs and help them make it a better product. So I think if it's still open, you can go to their forum and look that up. I've been on it for probably 3 months or whatever it's been since we got back from SIGGRAPH. So that was a while ago. And I have seen it steadily get better and better and better. And I think it's going to be a fantastic renderer when it's out. I think it's going to be great for ArcViz. I was talking with Patrick about it. Patrick Goski. Is that how you say his last name? Goski?
Goski?
Goski. Anyway, he and I were chatting.
I always think I'm saying it right, and then I get the wrong
one. I'll say Goski. It's probably wrong. But he and I were talking about Redshift and how it's going to be good for interiors because of that reason alone, being able to take a light and like solve the lighting and save it in an external file so that it doesn't have to calculate that light again, is a really smart way to do those kinds of jobs. But then, people have done really cool shit with V-Ray. So I don't know, maybe it still has a big audience. Well,
now that it's caught up, maybe there's a kind of a resurgence. I don't know.
Yeah.
Get some trial.
It does. They do have some cool stuff, some cool tech. I mean, one of the things that I was excited when V-Ray 3.0 came out was the adaptive bucket size. Have you guys heard of that before? Mm-mm. It's a real smart, it was actually really brilliant. So if you have a bucket on your render, and let's say it's 64 pixels by 64 pixels, and it starts chewing through your frame, as it gets towards the end of your frame, at the end of the render, you're going to have, let's say you have 8 cores. So you have 8, let's just say you have 8 buckets going, right? And it reaches the end of the render where what's left to draw is fewer than 8 bucket sizes. Mm-hmm. So now you're going to have like maybe 4 of your threads of your CPUs not doing anything until the render is done. So what adaptive bucket size does is it says, okay, as I get closer to finishing this frame, I'm going to split my buckets into quarters and keep going and going and going. So every thread on your machine is always being used to draw a bucket on your frame, which is really smart.
That sounds really cool, but sounds like it's kind of on the margins because that's really only like the last bucket or two in the screen that it really affects.
And that can, but that can mean a lot in your frame.
10% faster is a lot, you know?
It is because we found it to be, when we were using it in 3ds Max, it was great because what we would do is, this was kind of a funny cheat, we would basically choose the bucket order. This is going to get really nerdy for a second, but you're thinking bucket order, what, when does that ever matter? I just use it on spiral and like they're done. Well, what we would do is, if we had like a frame that was like really intense in a very certain part of the frame, like let's say the top. Let's say we had a lot of detail or a lot of ray tracing going on at the top of the frame. We would set the frame to render from bottom to top, so it would do the top last. So what that would do is it would actually start to speed up that part of the frame because that's usually using the adaptive bucket size and chewing through that part of the frame a little bit faster. So if you, we're talking like, we're not talking minutes of saving time. We're talking like seconds, like, or even like, you know, sometimes milliseconds, but that can mean a lot when you have like 250 frames to do. But yeah, so it's just, that was cool. What was the other thing that was cool about V-Ray 3.0? They have a denoiser now, just like RenderMan has. So it will actually render your frame and then run a denoiser as a post process to get rid of the grain in your rendering, which is pretty cool.
I've been meaning to do that experiment, which I think I've read a little bit about, but I've been meaning to do it directly and maybe even post some results on a tutorial. In fact, I'm going to write this one down. The idea is that you reduce your render to a like an acceptable amount of grain, but under the level of what would have been acceptable amount of grain. And then instead of cranking up your samples to get it clean in Physical Render or Arnold, get it to a decent place and then degrain it in something like Magic Bullet if you have a tool like that.
There is a secret plugin that is like Hollywood's secret magic weapon, and it's called Neat Video Denoiser, and it is literally the best denoiser I have ever used. And it's the site looks like it was made in GeoCities in like, you know, 1997, but it is a fantastic plugin. Don't be fooled by the website. We'll put a link up, but it is an awesome denoiser. Works in After Effects, Nuke, Fusion. I think you can even get it for Photoshop. But it is, you'll be shocked at like what it's able to degrain.
Oh, there you go, Nick. You've got your denoiser to go get.
There you go, bro.
Got my tutorial versus Magic Bullet. Versus
there you, yeah, that would actually I'd like to see that.
That's a headline.
I've used the Magic Bullet one, but I found the Neat Denoiser, the Neat Video one, to be faster. But I'd be down to see a head to head.
All right, my wheels are spinning over here. Any other news? Any other industry news? We kind of have a topic. I'm thinking, but. If we're in, we can get in the heavy stuff. I figured today we could talk about procrastination. Set you up, Chad. Come on, buddy. It's waiting for it.
I know, but now it just doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel natural. Okay, Nick, can't we do this next week?
Oh, thanks, buddy. so we actually got this question in the comments.
Oh, really? Is this our first comment-based topic?
Yeah, now I feel like a jerk because I didn't have a write down. Yeah, so as you guys are chatting, I'll go look for the username. But we are paying attention in the comments. We always ask for you guys to let us know what you guys want to see and other topics. You know, and it's hard. We get a lot of suggestions for tutorials to do. For the podcast, that's a little
not
tough.
Gonna happen. Yeah,
but
you come ask GSG for that, everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Chris. Ask GSG 1 o'clock Central Time. A little plug there. So anyway, let me. I'll go definitely look on who said that, and thank you guys for putting these in here. And I wanted to talk about procrastination because it's something I think everybody has at every level. So many things that we'll talk about are only applicable to students or only applicable to a certain level in your career. But I feel like procrastination is, in some case, always the always hiding behind the door, no matter where you are in your career. Even if you currently are super into a project and just can't imagine doing anything else, a week goes by and you're like, well, I actually don't want to do this anymore. So I thought what we could do is talk about, you know, procrastination in general, where we find it in our career, but also some ways that we can kind of like snap out of it and ways to kind of manage procrastination. Does that sound like something we could talk about?
Yeah, let's just dive in.
Let's do it.
Sweet. So when have you guys found yourself most like procrastinating?
It's weird for me where I have a lot of hobbies that I'm really into and I cycle through them. I'll like obsess over like, let's say, hand drawing for like a month, and then I'll get into digital painting for 2 months, and then I'll work on a quadcopter for 2 months, and then I'll do a month of exercise, and there's a whole cycle of things, and I often come back to them. But in this cycle, over the course of maybe a year or so, one of the cycles is extreme procrastination and or laziness, which is like 2 months of just I don't feel like doing anything. Like anything. Like I can't even think of a movie I want to watch. And I tend that actually I would love to like hit a button and get out of that mind frame. But my go-to right now is just like I'm going to wait until something sparks my attention and then get back into it. And that could be anything. I mean, it's often like a conversation with somebody or some sort of event happens, like maybe NAB comes around. It's like, oh, all these amazing artists and everything. Like, I'm gonna go home and work on a bunch of stuff. So that mine come in big waves like that. I mean, I guess I have daily, you know, you have daily ones as well. I'll come back around again to talk a bit more about daily procrastination, but I'll let someone else take over.
I like how you I like how you batch everything you do, including your procrastination.
Optimize, man.
Like 2 weeks.
You do a little procrastination all the time. Like you're missing out on time. You're like, you gotta optimize.
Chad, when do you find the procrastination knocking at your door?
I procrastinate about the most mundane stuff that, you know, I'm sure most people procrastinate about. Like, I will get that phone call from the dentist saying you have an appointment in 3 days, and then I'll call him up and reschedule it just because I don't feel like going.
Well, and, but you see, you made that call. That's impressive right there.
Well, I mean, they'll charge you, right, if you don't show up.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So, yeah, I mean, I procrastinate about stuff like that. I procrastinate about, you know, getting something done around the house. Like, I think I have, like, two or three projects around the house that I haven't done yet, just because I kind of subscribe to this philosophy that you have to take advantage of the energy that you need to do a task when it's presenting itself to you. So I'm against forcing anything in terms of creative, or, well, I guess there's some things in life that you just have to go do, such as, you know, get your license renewed or whatever. But if there's a creative thing that I could procrastinate on, I don't necessarily procrastinate. I just am waiting to be inspired to do it, if that makes sense. So I kind of am like, I have things that I need to do around the house that I'll wait till I'm in the mood to do that sort of thing, and then I'll do it, and then I'll just, you know, blaze through it. And it's the same thing with my creative work too. It's like, I have things that I probably, I could make myself do, but then I won't like them, and I'll resent the project. I'll resent this. I'll resent that. So what I try to do is I try to make it so whenever I'm inspired to make something, whether it's art or a daily render or whatnot, I go and do that. I take advantage of it. And then if there's when there's a day where I don't feel like doing it, I don't feel guilty because I took advantage of the day where I felt like doing it and I did a lot of it. So I tend to, I guess it's sort of embracing procrastination, I guess. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. You remind me of that idea of taking the energy that you have and using it to your best advantage is something that I want to say I read from the Rework book from 37 Signals and Basecamp. They wrote a great chapter in there about, like, taking that energy and understanding that energy it goes away. Like, passion falls apart if you let it, and it doesn't sustain itself. And so, like, taking early advantage of passion will get you ahead of the game. And I remember working with certain people too, that when they got the brief for a certain project or to do boards or something like that, they would immediately start working. They wouldn't even, like, brainstorm or go to lunch and think about it. They would just literally even just for an hour or two, sit down and just, like, almost vomit out this big chunk of energy that they then went back and refined and picked out of the vomit, like, all the good stuff, but they had to get it out.
Yeah, that's kind of like, I feel like I apply my style is kind of like that. I vomit a lot. Verbal diarrhea. Yeah.
I mean, definitely for me, anything I don't want to do, I'm the worst at that. I'm such a baby with that stuff. You know, some household things or appointments. Once I set an appointment, though, I rarely reschedule. I always, once it's on the calendar for me, I can mentally just prepare,
you know,
it's for
coming.
It. Yeah. Once a calendar actually helped me out. I'm thinking about this, and so I'll just mention when I get start procrastinating, and then we'll all kind of shift around and see what techniques we might have to fight this. I definitely procrastinate. I am huge. I am, like, every high school exam, every college exam, I was up all night. I didn't sleep. I procrastinated, and I waited and waited and waited, and then I would do it all last minute. But as I worked that muscle, like, as I actually trained my procrastination muscle, I actually found I just kind of embraced it, like you said, Chad. It's like, figure out how you work and then embrace that part of it. So what I realized was, what I tend to do best is procrastinate. And while I procrastinate, I'm thinking about it. I'm like stewing in it. And what the reason I don't take early action is that I can, if I took early action, I feel like it's almost wasted time because I'm going to change it five different ways before it actually comes out, especially with creative projects. So for me, if I have to give a talk or, you know, NAB's coming up or, you know, NAB calls, they're like, hey, we need the headline for your talk you're giving. And I'm like, explore cinema 4D. And they're like, what are you talking about? They're like, well,
I'll let you know the day of.
I've like four of them, right? And I know that it's going to be good and that I know I'm going to be valuable when I get on stage, but that process of like overthinking it is actually something I've started to just embrace, which is I am last minute and I just kind of need to work that way. And what I end up doing is kind of forming it in my head. And it's almost the opposite of what my friend does and what sounds like what you do, Chad, which is I'm kind of forming things in my head. And then at the last minute, I procrastinate until I can't anymore. And then it vomits out of me and it comes out like a fully formed piece.
Right.
And it
incubates
a whole donut.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, I got the egg in me. Right. And I'm brewing the egg.
Oh man. These are terrible visuals. You guys are awesome. Horrible stories.
You're not eating anything. Oh no.
EJ, we need you to do like an egg situation.
We need you to make an animation of Nick laying an egg.
Oh my God. That would be amazing.
Yeah, I can't. I get anxiety around not being prepared for things like that. So I get extremely, I get this really high level of anxiety before if I don't feel prepared for something. That's like my worst fear is to like not be prepared for something, even though I could probably wing it and kind of like, you know, figure out my way through a demo like that or whatever it is. But being unprepared is like a nightmare for me. So I will, it like for first time I demoed was at Max Sons booth was NAB. I think it was NAB. Yeah, it was NAB. And I was like nervous, man. Like I did not know how much to prepare. So I literally was like, I prepared everything. I overprepared really. And I had like way too much stuff. And then I watched everybody else and I was like, I think I put too much into this. Like, I think I probably could have just, you know, relaxed a little bit and not tried to plan every click in my head and just try to like let it happen and let it flow. And that would somehow help the performance. So, yeah, I mean, I understand. I see your method, Nick, and I'm like, I wish I could be more like that. And I'm trying to, in certain areas of my career, trying to do that. But it's hard, man, when you just have this like anxiety of like, oh man, I'm going to screw something up. You know, like you guys have been doing it for so long though, these demos that it's like second nature.
It wouldn't be fair to compare Nick and I to you doing like your first one this year.
I've done them for like 3ds Max and stuff, but like, I don't know, man, it's nerve wracking when you're.
Well, I will say that it sometimes feels like an excuse when I say that, the way that my brain works and that when I actually am ahead of schedule and when I do practice over and over and over again, something that it actually does turn out better. And I am good at, you know, extemporaneous kind of like speaking and I'm good on my feet. But when I do actually go like get it done 2 weeks, 3 weeks ahead of time and then rethink about that and kind of go through an iterative process instead of like super procrastinating, I actually do better work. And so for that, I think it's just about being self-aware about my process and tricking myself into coming up with something early on. That is something physical and tangible that then I can go refine. Because my ultimate worst procrastination thing is like white paper thinking. Mm-hmm. When there's
gotta
just
get put in the box.
People get freaked out.
Yeah, do something creative. Make a joke. And you're like, oh boy. But when there's already something happening in the air, it's always easier to make a joke.
Super
right?
easy. Dude, it's so easy.
It's once always easier exactly. So what I
like the one.
I mean, that's even my phrase. Like when somebody's trying to prompt me to make something up or do something, it's like I'll say, "Put me in a box." Like anything, like Greek mythology. Okay, cool. Now I got something to think about.
That is a really good point. When I was working at DK, like we saw a lot of people, we had to do a lot of blank page thinking, a lot of like white paper, nothing to go from, go make something. And you could really see like some people thrive in that area and some people just like need those confinements. They need to know what are my boundaries, because I can't just do white paper white page thinking. And here's my, I always thought like I would meet artists like that that would say, all right, give me some constraints. And, you know, you can give them constraints, but the idea of the blank page, it's really not that hard. And this is something that I talked about. I did like a talk in Ireland about this, and it's the idea of having enough confidence in your own experiences to be able to not be intimidated by the blank page, but to embrace it and just not force it. And that was the thing, is like, it's a getting back to my other procrastination thing, is like, don't force it, you know. And this is a really crude and horribly rude way to put it, but creative, whether you're motion designer, graphic designer, the creative process is a lot like taking a dump. This is going to be, now bear with me here.
All right.
We're putting a not safe for work tag on this podcast.
Oh, come on. I could have said a lot of things. Okay. So it's either comes out no problems at all. You're in, you're out, or it's really hard and you struggle. And you have to know. It's again, I'm going to be embarrassed when I hear this.
I think we got our headline. Hold on, let me write this down.
but you know what I mean? Like, you have to realize, like, and so you'd see somebody, we'd get a brief and they would, you know, for a motion design piece or whatever. And some artists would just immediately sit down at their desk and just be like this blank stare, not knowing what to do. And then some artists, you know, are just able to turn it on and go start creating stuff. You just got to know, are you in that frame of mind? And if you're not, that's okay. Go take a walk, go get a coffee, go see a movie, go, you know, nobody says that inspiration or creativity has to happen at your desk at the exact moment that the day starts. If you're doing any sort of like creative blank page thinking, most of the time it doesn't happen at work. It happens in the shower. It happens on a walk. It happens in these other places. So I always say to people, like, don't be intimidated by it. Just understand, try to find out your triggers to get you into that frame of mind that allow you to do that kind of creative thinking, and try to set yourself up to do that sort of thing. So whenever I have a block, I take a shower, I take a bike ride, or I know Nick, you're an idea in the shower guy too, right?
Yeah, I think there's something, I mean, there's a lot of science backing this up too, but it's getting away from forcing yourself to come up with an answer when your brain actually starts to connect with other things. Because sometimes if you think about something on your own and you're forcing it, you're just doing a circle and you're just repeating the same idea or the same, you know, general concept of an idea. But when you detach from it a little bit, I think your brain still understands the stress about that we need to get this done, but it kind of tucks it away for a second. But there's loose ends. I kind of picture it like there's little loose ends dangling out about it. And then when you go do something else and see a different typeface on a sign, or you go walk past a store, it's almost subconscious, like little things snap into those tentacles.
Right.
And when you get back, or while you're on your walk, or the next morning, all of a sudden there's like a new fully framed idea that came from everywhere and nowhere at the same time.
Yep.
And all of a sudden it's like, oh, maybe I could approach it this way. And now you have some traction.
I wonder if the like new ideas coming, like when you're taking a shower and whatnot, is kind of like the inverse of like a sensory deprivation tank, where it's like the sound of the water and the pressure of the water and the temperature, it's like sensory overload. So you can't think about that. There's so much happening that like you can't focus on it. So it all just kind of disappears.
See, my theory on that is, and I'm not a scientist, 'cause
that's true for me as well.
But a shower or driving, even if you're just learning how to drive, that is sensory overload. That's like, do I turn my flip over there? But if you do it for, you know, 10 years, 5 years, 2 years, it's just second nature, right? So now your brain is in a place. I think of it like this. Same with showers, same with driving. And by the way, same with massages, acupuncture, chiropractic, like all these things that are a little bit, do they work, do they not kind of thing. I think it all stems from putting your brain in a place where it can't, you can't be looking at a phone and you can't be focusing on something else.
Everything you're describing has one thing in common, and that is you are not trying to distract yourself by something. All you're being forced you're being forced to be left alone with your thoughts.
Yep.
Because you can't be on your phone in the shower.
Right. That's a scary thing, but it's also a creative thing. Right. Not with the new
phones. The waterproof ones are coming out, so.
But I think the link to that, in fact, I take a road trip every year and I drive hours, like 80 hours by the end of these road trips that I've been driving. And I do them because of that, because I have to either listen to a podcast, listen to a book, listen to music. But I can't, music's great. I can't, what I can't do in a car driving is read a blog post, search, you know, look at Facebook or Reddit. I can't even do a tutorial. I can't even like be physically working in a way that is active. I have to be in this like passive connecting the dots mode of like, oh, I can kind of back out of my day and connect things in a way. So I think there's something huge about getting away.
Yeah. There's
taking the walk.
You're distracting the logical part of your brain with a mundane task, driving, showering, whatever, that is just doesn't require much thought, but allows your more creative, almost subconscious part of your brain to be more active. And driving for me was I commuted downtown Chicago for an hour and 25 minutes each way for 10, 15 years. So that's where all my ideas would come from. I'd just be driving, listen to music, and your brain goes into autopilot. Have you ever been in a situation where you're like driving and you get somewhere and you don't remember how you got there?
That's amazing. Right. I love when that happens.
When that happens, it scares the hell out of me, because I'm like, oh my God, like how many times did I almost die during that?
Well, you realize that you changed lanes and stopped at stop signs, like,
And meanwhile, I will have had some idea for some project, and I'm like, I would literally, I would have my phone mounted on my dash, and sometimes I would go into the memo app, and like, I would say my idea so that I wouldn't forget it, because sometimes I'd forget it by the time I was home.
My voice memos is 100% either song ideas that I have while driving, or memos to myself of like, it's all clear to me right now. I'll talk to myself. Hey, Nick, just so you know, when you get home, you need blah, blah, blah. And sometimes it's to-do list, but things become so clear when you take a step back. I mean, and maybe this is a good time to transition into like techniques, things we could do to kind of like to clear up. I think we've all agreed on the, like getting away from the glowing rectangle idea.
I want to elaborate on that a little bit, because I feel like it's not even getting away from it. It's almost like being temporarily trapped in the situation in which you know you can't go to that. If you just go and you sit on your sofa and you're like, all right, I'm not going to touch the computer, I'm not going to watch TV, I'm going to sit on the sofa. But you could get up and go to the computer. You could pick up your phone. You could be like, what time is it? I can go find out. If you're in the shower, that's not an option. If you're driving, it's not an option to jump on the internet. If you're getting a massage, that's not an option right now. So without even the possibility, at least for this small window of time, there is no possibility of doing that distraction. I guess my brain will entertain itself. And it'll entertain itself by solving problems.
Yeah, I mean, I think physical activity also ties into it, where the couch wouldn't trigger that side of your body. You know, like, it's almost like you need to make your hands busy, but not.
Yeah, you
got to
like occupy yourself with something. I mean,
yeah,
it's not. Yeah, I don't think
that's true. If you're on the sofa, you'll fall asleep.
Yeah, if it were
right, you're on the treadmill,
immediately fall asleep. Nap time done. Which is a whole other. Now I know we're going to transition, but one more thought on this. It's sometimes like, I don't know if you guys are like this too, but I have this ability, maybe because I've been doing it for so long, where I will have an idea of how I want to make something in 3D, and I will make the entire thing in my head, like every step, every button, everything that I want to do, so that when I sit down at the computer, I just do it. Does that ever happen to you guys? Do you ever do that?
I visualizing...
visualizing it to a point where you're like, I know exactly where I want to put this and how I want to set that up and what setting this needs to be at.
I don't think I do that at all.
No, there's always an aspect of tweaking. You may have a little bit more awareness of like what exactly can dial it in, but there's so much to me that's like, that's close and I need to dial it in. But I know what you mean though. There's a sense of detachment that you have where you can actually see clearer than if you were to be in front of it. Like, is that what you're saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
like even if you weren't, if you were in front of it, you'd be tweaking 100 things, but the fact that you were away from it, you actually saw it all the way to the end clearly. And now,
yeah, you know what? You're probably right. That was probably a muscle I had to build because of my commute. Cause I would literally be either, I used to take the train too. So I'd be on Metro for like an hour and a half each way. So I would have this time where I would have this idea of something to make. And I had like an hour before I'd be able to go home and actually sit down behind a computer and try to make it. So I would sit there and think about all the different ways it could be made and what was the most efficient way and what it was going to look like if it looked like this and had this setting. And that, and I don't know, maybe it's just a muscle I developed or something, but now I feel like it's like when you're, it's getting back to the musician thing, it's like being able to, you're writing a song in your head and then you get home and you just play it. Like you don't even have to like work through it. You just, you already have it up here. Like that's kind of,
that's interesting. And I think that's why maybe I have a problem doing that, because I actually, this is something I have been frustrated with myself, and I've even tried to train it a bit and I'm just not very good at it. I cannot do a very good job of visualizing something to its completion, like at all. Like I can't, like if I close my eyes to like draw a face or something, like I cannot visualize it. I just have to start doing it and potentially iterating it, and just lacking that ability to pre-visualize something. I'd say that's more a skill I lack than anything.
Do you find, Chad, that you're missing anything now that you work from home, that your commute is like in the next room, basically? Do you think that you're missing any part of your creative side?
No. If anything, I feel like I'm allowing myself to use that muscle. I mean, I still, like, my daily renders that I do in my head before I even kind of do them on the computer.
Oh, yeah? Well, that's interesting. Because I have no idea what I'm going to end up with when I begin.
Well, I usually have a vague idea. I mean, it's not pixel for pixel, but it's like I have a vague idea of what I want to do, and then I just go through the process and do it. And usually it's around a technique or something like that. So whereas before, I couldn't because I was driving or whatnot. I don't think the muscle's getting atrophied or anything like that, because I'm definitely, before working outside of GSG, I could have an idea, but I wouldn't have time to actually mess around with it because I had other responsibilities that would get in the way. So I either would back burner it and like maybe get back to it another time, or maybe just forget about it altogether. So now in this job, the beauty of it is that I can be in the shower and have that idea and take 10 steps to make it a reality. Whereas before I had to sit and wait, you know, so it's, I don't think there's any, I mean, no, I don't think it's really that big of a difference.
Maybe begin the transition to the solutions. I think an interesting aspect to procrastination is the different Zoom levels of it, because you can have like moment to moment procrastination of like, I've got all these emails to do, I'm not going to do them. So it's like very immediate, instant, and things you could do, but you're not going to. And then you could have like bigger, like daily ones where it's more like pushing off the dentist appointment, or I don't feel like doing this chore. But then you can really zoom out to these really big ones. I've witnessed this several times in my life, and even participated in them sometimes, where you can procrastinate with like major aspects of your life, where it's like, you know what, everything would be great, everything would be perfect once this thing is in place, and maybe once this thing is in place, and you're doing these big giant global procrastinations of like, for a while when I first got out of college, me and some buddies were going to try and do some business stuff, and we were like, oh well, before we do any business, we're going to have to buy this one laptop. And it's like, oh okay, we have the laptop, but we need this camera. It's like, okay, well, we got the camera, now we need to get this thing. And it kept being like months in between each of these things, and we did little things in between, but there was always this, everything will be working once this thing happens. And I've gotten a lot better about that kind of thing, but you can really get these like month by month giant procrastinations of like, oh, we're waiting for this thing. It's like, well, do you really have to wait for that thing? But I just wanted to kind of point out, like,
at that point, it becomes like an excuse, is what you're kind of saying, is like, whether it's conscious or subconscious, you're basically afraid to start because
potentially, yeah, whatever reason. But I mean, a lot of procrastination is either laziness or fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, or it's just, you know, yeah, I guess that's really only those.
I'm trying to think of any other. What's another motivation you could have to procrastinate?
There's something better to do.
I mean, that goes to laziness, fun. I guess.
I don't know if it was, you know, there's.
Or you could be too busy. Yeah. But that's not procrastination, yeah, then. That's just being too busy.
That comes true. To.
Procrastination, I guess, by definition, is that you have time to do something, but you choose not to do it. All right, let's get into solutions.
Yeah, what's solutions.
Well,
I've got a quick. Did you say go?
Drugs are a great solution.
This is drinking.
It's getting drugs. Getting off at. No, somebody else go.
Well, I've got a quick tiny one, and this is for like the tiny things. This is when you're supposed to be doing your emails or whatever the thing is. For me, the thing I have to do every day that I don't necessarily want to do, I pretty much guarantee I don't want to do, is I have to do tech support. Because we have a whole bunch of plugins and we have a lot of tech support that comes in. And so for anybody who doesn't know, if any kind of technical tech support question comes in, it pretty much ends up coming to me. So like I get all the technical ones, which means I usually have to break down files and really do some detailed follow-ups and all that. And it's kind of a big pain in the butt. And it gets so much worse if I skip a day or a couple days. So a solution to me for that level of procrastination is systematizing. Like making and just like a regular repeatable schedule. So for me, I came up with this rule like 2 years ago and it has 100% worked for me. Something I like on the internet is just webcomics. I have a whole bunch of different webcomics I follow and there's pretty much webcomics every single day that you can follow. And I am not allowed to look at any webcomics for the day until I've done my tech supports. And so it's like the first thing I do. It's like a little reward at the end. So it's like I sit down and I have anywhere between 20 minutes and an hour of tech support to do every day. And the instant I'm done with that, I can go and read the daily comics from that day. And there you go. And I can't, and I want to read those comics. So I have to do those tech supports.
Well, that's perfect.
I just gave you a cheers on that one because yeah. I am the same way. It's all about, and this is because I'm a child. I have to give myself rewards for everything that I hate doing. And then throughout the day, I'll be like, okay, I'm going to work on this for 35 minutes before I'm allowed to check Twitter or check whatever, or I can't do anything until I've done this. So I'm the same way. I'm all about rewards, not necessarily like, I'm not really like strict about it or, you know, I have a specific thing that I have to do before I'm allowed to do this. I just kind of, it's more of like an internal thing for me where I'm like, okay, I'm going to work on this for 15 more minutes and then I'm going to go and check my email and check the comments and do this. And then I'm going to come back to work for another 20 minutes. And I try to like, I give myself little rewards throughout the day that way.
You have like a candy dish on your desk?
No.
we talked about this in something similar in an earlier podcast and I brought up the Pomodoro technique, mm-hmm. which is something I use, which is just something I'm bringing up now because it's really similar to what you guys are saying, which is, you set the timer for 25 minutes and you focus in on whatever you're doing for 25 minutes. What you mostly do is you can't do anything else but what you're trying to do for 25 minutes. Maybe you're butting your head against the wall. Maybe you can't come up if it's a creative task. Maybe you can't quite figure it out, but you're trying for 25 minutes, answering email, doing tech support, anything you want. And you know that at the end of that 25 minutes, you get a 5 minute break and the alarm does the whole thing. There's websites like Tomato Timer. You can go set these things and then it beeps and you're like, yay, worked for 25 minutes, which is a small task. But when you're literally, you know, procrastinating and, you know, checking up some website you like checking over and over again, instead of doing what you're supposed to do, it's a nice way to go like be an adult, set the timer. And at the end you get to play. Mm-hmm. And so I've fallen into using that a lot, especially when deadlines are looming, there's a huge task to do, big, you know, big technical tasks that just take, not technical, tedious tasks that I'm just so bad at that I know all I have to do is go in and copy and paste something 100 times. And I just know that's going to be the most boring thing. Set the timer, do it, and now it's done.
Yeah, that's that they say there's, I don't know if I read a book somewhere, but there was some fact about a CEO. It might have been Steve Jobs. It might have been somebody else. I don't remember. But it was like, this person is really only worth their salary for like 10 minutes a day. But that
It was Richard Branson, I think.
Is that who? Okay. So yeah. I don't know. How did that quote go? Wasn't it like he really is only valuable for like that bit of time, but that bit of time that he is valuable, he's like really valuable.
Yeah. Well, I think the idea is like most of the tasks that he's doing day to day, almost anybody could do that is capable and competent. But the 10, you know, the one idea a year that he has that is fully formed, maybe in the way that you're saying, Chad, the one idea a year is worth billions.
Right. That's what it was. It was basically like, it's not about, it's like everybody, you might have like these 10, 20 minute tasks or whatnot, but that can sometimes be condensed down to doing really important stuff for 20 minutes is a great, it's a great way to use your day. Maybe that's the only important thing you do all day, but you know.
But the way that I read that quote or the way that I see that story is not, it's not an analogy of like, he just sits around answering phone calls all day and then has an aha moment. It's that he's practicing. Is that the practice of doing and working and keeping busy will find those bigger ideas. It's not the fact that he's like, "Oh, I did it and now I get to go do dumb stuff all day." I think the conceit of that quote and the reason that was powerful to me is that he is literally practicing that muscle all the time. And what usually comes out, anybody could just come up with, but because he's working on it, he comes up with these smarter ideas. And I think that would be true for a lot of people. We had Beeple on the stage at Half Res, and he was talking about the idea that he isn't super inspired when something really cool comes out that he likes or his audience likes. It's just the fact that he does one a day, and that consistency brings more good stuff to the table than if he did less, than if he, you know, worked one a week or one a month. And that practice is actually bringing him more stuff.
That is a completely different perspective than I had on it, but it's a valid one, and it makes sense to me. It's not, I guess my head was more like, It's not necessarily the quantity of tasks that you perform throughout one day. It's your ability to do them well. And if that only takes 10 minutes and the rest of the day is, you know, answering emails, then that's still a successful day. Hmm. And that's really what I got out of it was like, you can be really effective in a short period of time. Just be effective. And that's kind of where my head was, but I like both. I mean, they both make sense to me, and I just try to, you know, the whole daily thing, and we could go off on a tangent on that for a whole other show, but I could never, I don't have the stamina to do that. Because I would immediately, like, my philosophy is go get it down when it's flowing and not trying to force it. And I feel like the daily thing is just a grind of forcing it. And that goes against my philosophy, which is why my dailies come in batches when I'm in the mood. And I don't know, that's just how my brain works, I guess. But
I guess that's a difference in a personality type where you will still create your dailies when you're in the mood, and you will pump a bunch out and they'll work and you'll be happy with them. But there's people who will just maybe never make something. And to, like I was saying, to systematize something that you should be doing, but you don't want to do is better than not doing it at all.
Yeah.
So if you can be inspired and create regular work in the quantity that you're happy with, then you're already fine doing that. But force yourself to do a once a day, once a week, once a month project. Force yourself to, if you're not going to produce anything otherwise.
Well, I think that's probably why I'm not a writer, because I think writers probably have to perform more like this is a really weird, you know, connection to make, but like a daily render person, like Beeple, is a lot like a writer. You know, writers, they don't experience, a professional writer usually won't experience writer's block because every day they're working, every day they write. Like, that's just how they have to, that's how they live.
But Chet, you were in the industry for a long time and had work to do that maybe you didn't necessarily absolutely love, that you still had deadlines, that you still had clients, that you still had people calling. And you had to have had some situation where you're like, I'm not really in the mood and it's not the most creative thing, but how do you get unstuck with something like that where you are under the deadline, but your brain is not ready to tackle this right now?
Well, if it's a production task that you need to do and it's not a creative task, meaning I'm not going to come up with a world or campaign design, whatever, and I'm just executing, like we're in the execution part of the process and I don't want to do it, but I have to assign the same texture to a million things, I'll do it. I'll just, you know, bury my head, turn up the music and get through it. But I guess it's different in production than it is with my own creative work. I guess if it was my job to do dailies and like that's what I did and I got up every morning and came up with an idea and made it, like a lot like a cartoonist might do that, then that would, I think maybe my mind would try to fall into that groove and make that try to work. But I personally, it would be really hard for me, I think. It would be a real challenge for me. But production's different because you have a tangible goal. You know where you need to go. You know where you need to be. Even if the goal is just an idea, that's still a goal. And that blank page thinking can be remedied by going, taking a walk, a shower, whatever. You'll come up with the idea and get that. You'll kickstart it into production eventually. It's just, you know, the idea of doing a daily is really frightening, not because of the amount of work it would take, but the taxation on my creative process. I think it would be really hard for me to do it, like to sit the way he does it, I think.
Yeah, well, no, I totally agree with that. It's almost, but I mean, you get the satisfaction of having created something, but and I forget what it is, but there's like a job satisfaction type survey where it's like, it's like artists, or I forget who it is, but it's like construction workers are very satisfied with their jobs overall because they're creating something. At the end of the day, you can see something completed. But in the meanwhile, most of us probably in our early jobs worked in like fast food. I worked in the grocery store. Every day you had to restock the shelves. Every day you had to pull all the food up to the front to make it look like it's full all the way across. Like it's a grind and nothing changes and you don't feel like you accomplished anything because tomorrow you have to do it all over again. And if you're kind of forcing yourself to do these daily renders, you might be pulling yourself more into that territory. Like if you're turning it into a grind where it's like, hey, I made a daily render, but tomorrow I have to do it again. And if it feels like a grind, then that could start really pulling back on like any kind of satisfaction of it.
Well, that gets to something I wrote down earlier. Here is just remembering to say no more to certain projects, to understand yourself well enough to say that this is a cool idea, but let's take it one step at a time, or maybe say no. So I'm thinking about projects that maybe come to you that are not in your wheelhouse, that you know you're not great at, that you know you're not excited about. Hopefully, you know, and this takes a certain level of career to do this. And especially early on, you want to say yes a lot more.
Nobody says no anymore. Nobody, come on, man.
You can't say no. This is
but I also, I mean, but even well, let me personal ask
you,
projects.
How often can I say no to you?
Well, that's a slightly different relationship. But we also have a pretty open idea at this company. Not to make it about us again, but of course we always do. We have a pretty open idea at this company, which is we mostly want to do work that we like to do. And hopefully I bring that up enough with you guys that's true. That's the kind of company that I want to build. That's the kind of company I would like to work at, is that we understand there's some things we want to do, like really detailed tech support that we don't always want to do, but that comes with a lot of freedom as well. So what I would say is you said yes to that. And like, you know, if you're questioning your decision, maybe we need to have a talk. But like what I'm saying is like you are aware of how you interact with the world, right? So you know that you do have a lot of freedom, but it comes with the price of these other little things that you need to do. And I think that is true with many jobs or with many things like a daily render. The reason I brought it up was more about saying yes or no to taking on a daily render challenge. Maybe your personality should be more once a week, a bigger project once a week. Maybe your personality is to do a big, you know, project in a couple days and then see how it goes. It's something personally I've struggled with a lot of, I have a lot of ambitious projects that go and go and go and then they stop. So for me, with things like the original Grayscale Gorilla photo a day project, that was 3 years in a row, didn't miss a day. And one day it just trailed off. Mm-hmm. And 5 second projects, like we can go through those ideas. But what I've tended to do is to commit early on a project to do it at a certain pace, but have a clear deadline at the end of it to then look back and say, do I want to do more of this? And it's something that
I don't think a lot of people listening probably have that ability, you know?
They do with a daily render project, for example.
That's true. Like, but that's different, you know? Like that, I feel like there's a big difference in approaching a personal project, which is what I would consider to be the daily render, and then like a client project. There's nobody can, not very many people have the ability to say no at their job to their boss or no to a client that comes to them wanting something ridiculous.
Yeah, but we also have a lot of freelancers that listen to this and do have the ability to direct what they want to say yes to as a project, right?
Well, Ted, let me ask you, since you were in production most recently, I mean, once you have client work, don't you mostly lose the ability to procrastinate? I mean, if you are successful, then how much procrastination are you even allowed to do once you have a deadline?
Well, I mean, not much. I mean, if there really isn't any procrastination in the professional
right. So
sense,
at this point,
I mean,
we're more the optional creative side of things.
The procrastination can still happen in a lot of different small ways in production, and a lot of the times there's no room for it. Otherwise, you just don't get the job done, or you do a really shitty job. Pardon the language again. Sorry, Nick. the real Chad is starting to peek through.
It's getting late.
Yeah,
you could get some whiskey going.
But yeah, I mean, getting back, I had a point before that. What was Nick just saying a second ago? He was saying something about
optionally doing a project or not.
The freelance thing, the mention of like, well, freelancers can say yes or no. Well, that's a really interesting topic because there's a lot of people, a lot of companies don't like to tell the freelancer that they want to book what the job is. And I have an opinion where if you should tell the freelancer what the job is and they should know exactly if it's a good fit for them or not, because it's going to do you and them a disservice if you book them on something that they're not skilled in. But then, you know, there's the other side of that coin is from the producer at the company that's booking the freelancer's problem is, what if it's not a sexy project, but you still need it to get done by a competent person? Therefore, you need to book somebody good. And if you tell them that it's an unsexy thing, right, they're not going to take the job. So there's like this, you know, there's two sides to that coin. I think that the right producer can still book a really good artist on a bad job if they know the person and are, you know, good about making that relationship last. But yeah, I mean, it's not very many freelancers that I know of even consider, well, not some of them do consider passing it on to someone else if they're not the right person for it. But when you're a freelancer, sometimes you just want to make money and you want to just take everything that you can. And sometimes you just get into situations that suck.
I guess this may be totally open to the idea that this could be some privileged way of looking at things. But ultimately, if we do ultimately have creative control over our life and what we do for a living, and I'm assuming many of us that are sitting in front of a computer for a living have more options than like work or don't, I think that ultimately if you say and work your fifth job that you really don't like and you find yourself like hating the process and hating the clients and hating the producer, it may be on you more than it is on anything else. That's what I'm suggesting, is like, maybe you're a better modeler and you just need to like rebrand a little bit and take a step back and go, why did I hate the last five jobs? I guess that's the angle I'm trying to take, is like, you know, saying no more to things that in the past have driven you to like procrastinate. And this is all about procrastination. We don't have to like talk ourselves into playing our favorite video game. We naturally want to go do that. And what I'm trying to do is align people with jobs that they love to do. That's kind of been my thing. So it's a big umbrella move here, but if you find yourself too many days in a row hating five clients in a row, you may want to take a step back and make sure you're in the right place.
I totally agree with that. I want to pull this. We probably can't go on too much longer, but I want to make sure we're getting a little bit more back on topic, because this is more like career choices. And it's going to be my assumption that if you're listening to this podcast, there's a good chance, if you're listening to a podcast about procrastination, my assumption is going to be you're somebody in a creative field who has some free time and wants to be more creative and somehow can't figure out how to go about doing that. That's going to be who I guess is the average person listening to this one. That's
what we want to get podcast, out of it. So, this podcast is actually doing a disservice to these people.
They should be working.
They should be
they're procrastinating by listening.
People, go out and do your thing.
But given the premise I just said, what is some advice we might be able to give to, like, saying you have free time, you could be – I'm sure everybody listening to this has a bunch of projects in their mind of creative things that they theoretically want to be doing but can't seem to get off their butts and go do it. Because I have four different projects that are like ongoing right now, and I'm not working on any of them.
So like, I have something just for that, because it reminded me of something that helped me a lot, which are projects I do want to do, and I do technically have the time for it, but I always find myself procrastinating. Sometimes these are bigger projects, new things you have to go research and try, and you know, think about something like working out as well, where it's like, I know I need to and I want to and I'm ready for this, but man, how do I get started? For me, what helped me out recently was finding a buddy to hold each other accountable for what they want to do, and they hold you accountable for what you want to do. So if it's a creative task, if it's a second project that you're trying to start, or a daily render, or any one of those things, it's literally getting on the phone or a Skype call and saying, like, what's your thing that by the end of this month you want to have done? Whether it's writing a book, or this could apply to a lot of big projects that you know you have to start to tackle, and you just literally keep each other accountable. And one way you could do this is to even make bets on it, like whoever doesn't do it is now accountable for cash or some embarrassing photo, or like there's a lot of things you could do with this, right? I've even heard it on, maybe it was a Tim Ferriss thing or something, but it was like, you know, if you fail on this project, you have to donate to a charity that you don't like. Right? Like you have to donate to the other political team that you're not a fan of. So like, because many people are driven by negative reinforcement more than positive. So if you say like, if you don't do this, I'm going to send this $100 to people you don't like, or, you know, or maybe it's just a steak dinner with a friend or something, but find a way that connects with your brain that makes yourself accountable. So, 'cause now you're doing it not for you. Like if you write the pages or don't, or do the daily render or don't, who's really going to matter, mm-hmm. or who's going to care? But if you make a friend go, did you do it? It's sometimes that's enough to go like, no, I have to. And I personally started doing this with a friend of mine, and we should have another phone call soon. It reminds me. But that worked for me, definitely, just as a practical thing to get going.
You suggested one time, I might have listened to it on one of your podcasts one time, Nick. And I was doing this for a while, and following up on your idea, combining your two ideas, you had talked about that you had, I think you called it the 2-day calendar or something like that.
Oh, yeah, my dad made that up.
Yeah, the thing from your dad, where it's like every day you write down two things that you're going to accomplish that day, and it can be big stuff, small stuff, but two things, and no matter what, you are making progress. And what I actually did is I set up a 2-day calendar with a friend, and we were both on the same calendar, and every day we had to on that calendar, mark down the two things that we wanted to accomplish that day, and just, you know, kind of do it every weekday or every weekend. And it's just like a little thing. And so it kind of was, there's somebody else to keep you accountable, and you're just going to do something. It could be whatever. Like, I'm going to move the painting supplies up into the room so that maybe tomorrow I start painting, but something to start working towards completing a goal.
Yeah. They say, like, if you want to start running, just make it, put on your shoes as your list. Like, you don't even have to go anywhere. Just put your running shoes on. And if you decide to put your shoes on and immediately take them off, then you won. You did it. But most people don't. They put them on. They're like, all right.
All right. I've done this far.
I guess I'll go for a walk. So yeah, that's a good one. I mean, and I think it just comes down to the idea of just being busy. I mean, this is about procrastination and not like depression or anything like that, but it's like, I find myself most happy when I'm working and when I'm productive. And like you said, Chris, like when you could stand back and go, oh, I did it. And especially with things that I know I need to do, but are harder to kind of get traction on.
Mm-hmm. Like exercise. And
sometimes
everybody can relate to that one.
Yeah. Sometimes you just have to, or sometimes I find myself in this, like, just start doing it mode, where I'm almost like defeated when I start, but then I eventually see the light at the tunnel, and I'm always reminded I'm always reminding myself over and over again to just like stop being in your head worrying about it and just start. Like, you're gonna do it anyway. Why are you sitting and beating yourself up over it over and over and over again? I'm reminded of probably five things on my to-do list that have been there since May that are simple. And just the fact that I see them on my list puts like a little dent in my heart, and it sucks every time. And every time I see it, I'm like, I should just do that. Why am I not doing that? I'm an idiot. You start like beating yourself up. You're down on yourself. And when I find myself in that mode of like, you're not an idiot, you're smart, you can do that, you got this, buddy, and you start giving yourself high fives and you actually get it done, man, I've just feel so weights lifted off me. I feel so proud of myself. And so for me, it's sometimes just yelling and saying like, just go, just do it. Get out.
Yeah. Do you maybe have something to wrap us up, Chad? We're already a little over here.
Yeah. My advice to those people is just to, you know, take a look at what you're doing and ask yourself, is this the best use of my time? And just get off your ass and do some stuff, make some stuff, and just stop with the excuses. Stop binge watching 10 shows. Everybody's got time to make their art, get better at something, learn something. It's hard. There's no magic solution. You just got to push yourself through it. Like Nick said, you just got to like do it. Like, just, I'm going to be like Shia LaBeouf.
I just put that link in the podcast notes.
Yeah, there you go. Really, that is the advice that I have, is like, if you say you don't have time, you're full of, I already swore once, you're full of shit, because you do. And everybody does, unless you're, you know, I've never met any person that doesn't have a little bit of time to give to accelerate their career, make themselves a better artist, learn a new tool, whatnot. It's all in your head. It's all just, you're afraid, you're lazy, whatever it is, just get off your ass and do it.
Isn't that amazing? We talked for 40 some minutes about this and all the tips and tactics and things and all this stuff, and it really basically comes down to either tricking yourself to do it, or to just tell yourself to do it, or to have a friend to tell you to do it. And the only other option is don't do it or don't.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, you talk to people and they're like, oh, I don't know how, you know, I can't do that, I don't have time for this, and it's like, I don't even have time for you. Like, I don't even want to listen to that attitude, because anytime somebody that ever worked with me, worked for me, would give me some excuse like that, I just didn't want to hear it, because it's not true. It's just that type of attitude. I don't have time for that in my life.
We're re-recording the whole thing, because you're right. The whole big part about this is that this stuff doesn't come up. And in production, when you're working, the reason it is hard to find that time to like think about procrastination is you literally either don't have time for it, or those are the people you're not working with. Like, if you find yourself working with somebody that is constantly not getting their job done, they either need to do it. Get fired.
Well, that's why I tried to bring the topic back around to personal free time creative projects. Because if you're working, you better be working. Because that's like true. I don't want to be sitting next to you it's if really I'm having to like, pick up your slack.
Procrastination is a luxury that
it is.
Production artists don't have. And but they do have it in their free time. Like, oh, I really want to learn RealFlow, but you know, I'm too busy. And it's like, oh, really? What time? You didn't work late last night. What time did you get home? Oh, like, you know, 6:37. What'd you do all night? Well, I played video games and watched TV. Oh, so you do have time.
Lots and of time.
It's like that kind of thing. It's like when people have a conversation with me about that, I get really like almost a little angry with them, I guess, because I'm like, you know, when I was working downtown, I was, you know, I had a different software thing that I was doing for 3ds Max stuff. I had my full-time job. I had two kids. I was married. I mean, I was all the time going. And so anybody that came up to me and was like, well, how do I get better? How do I grow my career? And I'd be like, well, what are you doing when you get home at night? And they're like, well, playing video games. Like, well, there you go. I mean, you don't want it. I can't make you want it.
Yeah.
You know, like,
oh man, I got like 8 more topics.
Just start writing these down as topics. But overall, I would say that that's a pretty good point here is like, usually procrastination is going to be linked with some sort of stress. Like, here's a thing that I should or want to be doing and I'm not doing. So it really comes down to either start doing it or drop that thing so you can get rid of the stress. And you're not obligated to go and do like all these creative projects. Like, I have things I keep cycling. Like I said, I cycle around, but I could just drop one of them. It's not a thing I do anymore. Like, I don't have to keep up with this side project because I don't do that anymore.
Yeah,
and now I don't have to whine to people that I smell a
Yoda quote.
Oh man, this is good. give it to me, Chad.
Do or do not. There is no try.
No, that reminds me, Chris, of that there is sometimes, and I actually do this as well. Sometimes I do try to stay pretty busy, but sometimes the excuse is what people want to talk about more than what they actually want to do.
So their hobby is complaining.
Their hobby is complaining. Yeah. I've been there. And I think a lot of people have been there, but I'm a bad friend for that person. Like, it sounds like you are too, Chad.
I am, dude. I don't have any patience.
Anybody else is an enabler, and you're not going to allow that.
I'm not. Everyone else will say, oh, that sucks. And I could get into the details sometimes, but ultimately my goal – like I said, my goal is I really think that if people found a career path, a jobs that is even 1% more in tune with who they are as a person, that it's a better fit. And it doesn't have to be drastic. It doesn't have to be anything, but taking a step back and understanding that if you don't want to do something over and over again, you may not ready to be doing that full time, especially if it's a creative task. Now, you know, paying the bills and writing emails or whatever it is that you really hate, but you have to do, you got to do that. Like, be an adult, figure out yourself. But with creative stuff, man, you do have control. And enough of those days in a row, start thinking about, maybe this isn't for me.
I love that the tone of this podcast completely changed in like the last 10 minutes.
It did.
It went from being sympathetic and like,
well, yeah. you put the Just Do It link in, and just by putting the Just Do It link in the show notes, I think it totally flipped the whole mood of all of us, and we wanted to. I think we just all felt like yelling.
Yeah,
just do it.
All right. Well, there's something for somebody in that podcast.
Yeah,
I don't know they'll be motivated to do something.
Well, yeah. We'll help you out right now. Stop listening to this podcast. Take that thing that has been on your list, and I'm going to go do this right now. I know exactly what this is. I need to go do something that's been on my to-do list for the last over 6 months. That only takes 10 minutes to do, and is constantly wearing me down and stealing energy from me. I'm going to go do it tonight while I edit this podcast and get it done. So I encourage you guys to do the same and stop listening to this podcast and wait another week at least until the next one to come back and listen to the next GSG podcast. Thank you guys so much. Thank you, Chris and Chad, for talking about this stuff.
What, you don't want to pay this off?
Oh my gosh. I totally forgot.
We're already a half hour over.
I'm doing it, man.
Okay. So hold on. Why don't you talk us through why you got this? For those of you listening, Chad is opening a cardboard box with a Google. Why don't you talk about what this is, Chad, and why you got it and what's going on?
All right. So I am about to unbox the Google Pixel, the one that came out, I don't know, it was probably about a month or two ago. So this is the new flagship phone from Google. It's branded by Google, made by, I think it's manufactured technically by HTC. But I'm a huge Android, stock Android fan. So I had to buy this phone and try it out because it's got some really cool new features that are specifically tied just to the Google phone. So I'm going to get my knife here and unbox this thing for you without cutting myself, hopefully. All right, here we go. Let's see what we got here.
What kind of packaging, knife. Peanuts?
And by the way, this knife is Kershaw knife. It's a great knife.
That looks nice.
It's a nice little knife. All right, so opening up the package here. What do we got? We got some packing material. I ordered, it looks like it came with a nice, I ordered a USB-C wall adapter, just an extra one to have on hand. Nice box for that.
Very Apple.
Yeah, that looks nice.
This is the phone here. So this is what the actual phone box looks like. It's very nice.
Now, are there options? Are there sizes? What?
So I got the 5-inch model. So this is kind of the this is not like the Plus. This is not the XL. So it's the smaller. It's the smaller phone. I'm actually trying to go back to a smaller phone, which is nice. I do like how this box kind of slides out very nicely. Everything is very well fitted. Very minimal. They even have like a black interior, which is nice.
Looking
like
good.
That. What else is in here before I really truly unbox the phone? I also got myself a silicone case, which is very similar to the, because I was really in love with my iPhone silicone case, and I loved that thing to death. And when I switched to Android, I never really was able to find one. So they started making this as a Google branded one. So this is an actual real Google case. But all right, fancy, let's take a look at the phone. All right.
Let's see.
Let's see what we got here.
What color did you get?
It'll be a surprise.
Uh-oh. Did you get, you got the Hello Kitty model.
Yep. I went with the Hello Kitty model because that's just me. I went black, man.
Is surprising.
I know, like everything is black right now.
The desk, the jacket.
The only thing that's not black is my mic, which is really kind of weird. All right, so it looks like it's pretty well wrapped here. It's very cold because it was outside. Very nice. Okay, very premium. Good. Very premium feeling.
Looks like
wrapper.
An iPhone. Looks like an iPhone. Really? Yeah. It looks real solid.
So all the phones look the same now.
Look at it. It's nice.
So the thing about it, I guess, is that it's very thin. Number one, that's very light too compared to my other phone. Very very easy to handle. It's got the highest rated camera. If you follow any sort of the DX, it's DX. What's that camera site? DX something. Anyway, it's got the highest camera rating. Very very killer camera, which is another reason that I'm interested in this phone. That and the standard stock Google Android has a nice charger here. It's pretty. Not sure. Something I like nice. The. I don't really like the. I don't like the color being different. That's a little weird.
You want black stocky. Everything. I get it.
I kind of wished it would be black right there.
Get out the spray paint.
But let's see. I don't.
Now, does it turn on? Is there a little battery life in there?
Oh, look at that. It gave me. Okay, so it came with a. It's USB, so you can get a 90% charge in 15 minutes, or 8 hours in 15 minutes. I'm sorry, I misspoke. So I can get 8 hours of charge in 15 minutes. Through USB-C and this 18, I think it's 18 whatever, what is it, millihertz or gigahertz? Or whatever.
You're making stuff up.
I'm just making words up. You can tell that, you know, we're not a tech blog. Oh, it's got an adapter too. That's pretty cool. So it's got an adapter travel. For, like, looks like a regular USB. Yeah. So... Oh, I see. Okay, so this is
USB to USB type C.
See, that'd be a $30 dongle from Apple.
Yeah, this is free, man. Came with it free. So, yeah, the reason that I went with this is because I'm a huge Project 5 person, as you know, that's Google's cell phone service. And I pay very little a month. I think I'm going to pay probably about $27 this month for my phone. So that's a huge savings. The build quality is pretty solid, I got to say. Just looking at the kind of a satiny finish here. Then they have this like glass here, which supposedly is allowing the antenna to travel more freely through this part of the phone, gives you better signal. The other thing is that the fingerprint sensor is on the back, if you see here. So the idea is when you're taking it out of your pocket, you're already unlocking the phone by having your finger there.
Interesting.
Which is, it actually does work that way. My other phone is like that too, and it's really nice.
That's cool.
You can also, let me see if I can turn it on. Well, I don't want to turn it on yet because I have to put my other card in there and stuff. But you can actually scroll with this too, like swipe your notifications, which is nice. It's a really solid little phone. I'm really can't
wait. Give us a week, anyway. And then next week we need to know
how it's working out.
Should our viewers get the Pixel?
I mean, it's seems
looks cool.
Man. I'm excited. I'm gonna play with it.
Sweet.
Awesome. Well, enjoy your phone, Chad. Stay warm, everyone. We're not going to see you guys till we might be able to do one around before New Year's, but we're trying to schedule some stuff out. If we don't see you guys before then, stay warm. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas to everybody. And get something done. Go find that thing on your list. Get it done and let us know. If you have any tips, we love checking out our comments on YouTube. If you want to listen to this on a car ride, maybe you're going to Grandma's house, Aunt Sally's, you know, over the holidays, need something to listen to other than your family members. Download on iTunes. You can also give us a rating there. We always appreciate that and comments about the shows. And if you also want show notes, we put these on our blog. And also on YouTube with all the show notes and all the links to all this stuff, including Chad's new Google Pixel phone. Not sponsored, by the way. But
totally not. I'm open to that.
We don't have any sponsors. We should start getting sponsors.
Yeah, if you'd like to Google, if you'd like to sponsor.
I could probably even better at my unboxing if we had that happen.
Tomato timer, just saying. Second time I mentioned your website. I'm sure you guys have a great business model, a timer on a website. You just need a little help, you know, pimping that out. Anyway, we're just dragging this on. I hope you guys have a wonderful holidays. And thank you, as always, for listening to the podcast. Chad and Chris, thanks for joining me once again on this little podcast experiment. This has been really fun. And look for more episodes really soon. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Happy holidays.